Our next topic is what can I do? And this is another one of my sponsee sisters that I love. Please help me welcome Carla.
I'm an addict named Carla. First, I'd like to give thanks to God for allowing me to be here, for waking me up this morning with a strong desire to want to be clean and be in recovery, for allowing me traveling mercy up the highway. I'd like to thank the convention committee for asking me to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. I am honored to share the podium with my sponsee sister. I was sitting over there. Actually, I was feeling when I walked in the room. And as she was sharing, I almost felt like there was really nothing more for me to say. And my topic is, what can I do? And when they gave me the topic, I kind of like reflected on, you know, when I first got here, you know, and how they were preparing me to stay clean no matter what. They were preparing me to be the people person that I'm not. They were preparing me to stay clean no matter what. You know, and it's like no coincidence that this chapter comes after the steps. And, you know, and the literature is designed, like, and I heard her talking about not knowing where it's gonna take you. And, you know, when I first got here, all I was really focused on was the fact that this was gonna help me not use drugs no matter what. And I have proceeded to do that, you know, not use drugs, keep coming back, follow direction, you know, pretend or fake it till you make it like I really was a people person, because they had already taught me that this is a place that you can't really do it all by yourself. So I would act as if, because I had learned that real early. And you know, that only works for a while. And through the process of keep coming back and letting some people in, I had got uncovered. So I kind of backed off of some people and kept changing seats on the Titanic. No, because I'm saying it because you take you wherever you go. You know, and a lot of things have transpired since I've been, let me say this, relapses in my story. With 5 years clean, life showed up and I checked out. I ain't called nobody. I ain't worked no program. I ain't do what the program tell you to do. My back was against the wall, and I checked out. 2 years. And when I came back, I had, you know, made a promise to the God of my understanding that I would be willing to do whatever it took if he spared me again. But it's something about after, you know, the smoke is removed. And after, you know, you get a little hair back, get a little curves back, you know, start smelling good and looking good, and, you know, people start calling you by your name again, you start to feel like, maybe I could do this thing on my own again. With 4.5, almost 5 years clean, my mom had a stroke. You know, and like I said, when I got here, that chapter, what can I do, to me, was the focus on staying clean from drugs. But when my mom had the stroke, my mom was 55, and I was 40. And me and my mom used together. And I only had about 4.5 years clean, and I really felt like, shit, it was my time to shine. look, not focusing on the prayer that I had. Told God that if you spare me this time, that I really, really, really would do what you want me to do, opposed to what I want to do. And when the thing happened, I said, you know, not right now. You know, I really don't want to do all that right now. And what happened, the literature took on a new look. Because the things that they was telling me that I needed to do to stop using drugs have become the things that I needed to do to be a caretaker to my mom. I needed to reach out to people. I needed to make meetings. I needed to look. And even on the journey of doing all that, it talks about it in that chapter that some friends might fall to the wayside. Because everybody ain't going to understand that you can't do this because you got to put your mom first. And then, you know, people will come to you with situations that they ain't never took care of their mom.
You better come on.
You know, I tell you that they understand how you feel. Now, my mom's a recovering addict. We smoked crack together. We tricked together. We fought over the last hit. You know, we lived in old houses together. No, really. So when I wanted to make a meeting by myself, most times I had to bring my mom. And my mom can't talk because of the stroke. So a lot of times when she was trying to get me to explain what was going on in the meeting, she would irritate me. You know. Like I could ride out with the newcomer one last minute or for 5 last minutes or sit on the phone for 5 extra minutes, or I could take somebody to a meeting, or I could try to understand and not be understood, or I could stay after the meeting a little bit, or I could do all that for them. But when my mom would sit in the meeting and try to get me to explain what was going on, I would feel agitated. So I would pray and ask God, what is it all about? And he revealed to me that there were some unresolved issues. Because she was supposed to be the woman that protected me. You know, she was supposed to be the one that made sure the food was on the table, clothes was on my back, teach me how to be a lady. You know, and I really didn't get in touch with that because before I used, I had moved somewhere, and then when she had the stroke, I had to bring her with me. And then it's something about being in the same house that you with the person that you have a major resentment with. And even in that, I would try to fake it till I make it because I didn't really want people to know that I was sitting in a meeting and be loving and caring to y'all. And then everything about my mom would irritate me. You know, y'all ain't supposed to know that. Because people that's in recovery don't act like that. But the reality of it is until you admit you got a problem, can you get help? And, So I would go home at night and, you know, I would go home at night and I would, you know, I pray a lot. You know, I pray a lot and ask God to put people in my life to help me. And then when the people that's supposed to help me come in my life, I shut down. I shut down. Because I too am the person that think that the people that I want to help me should be here to help me. But I don't ever know who God's going to use to help me, but I can be so rebellious and picky, you know. And what happened is just recently, my mom was in the hospital and she had a stroke and a heart attack. And I was, when they told me about this chapter, I was thinking, well, how does this apply to the situation that I'm in now? And, you know, I went to the hospital every day, and I was with my mom, and I was running back and forth to work, and you know, back and forth to the hospital, and back and forth to work, and back and forth, because that's what y'all taught me to do. You know, and what was revealed to me is that, Carla, you know, this is your last shot at getting this thing right with your mom. You know, and my mom loves me with everything. Irregardless of how we use together, you know, and what I get in touch with is that she loves me the way she knows how to love me. But I have such high expectation, you know. I don't, like, always let people off the hook when the God of my understanding has let me off the hook. And how I know he let me off the hook is because he keeps giving me opportunities to get it right. Keep giving me chance after chance after chance to get it right. You know, so I came down here on Monday. Came to Ocean City on Monday because I prayed when I was riding up here. And I was like, God, when I get back, let me be the person that you want me to be to my mom. Because, you know, I could put focus on everything. Check this out. I was married. The marriage went. Anything you put before what God wants you to focus on is going to go. Look, and because I'm so self-absorbed, first of all, I know that I got married because my biological clock was ticking. It was never about because I loved him and I wanted a life partner and we're going to do this thing. Because the minute I said I do, I knew it was a mistake. But it's something about trying to impress y'all. You know, I got everything else. I make meetings. You know, I hang out. I got a good job. I drive a nice car. I thought the only thing was missing was a partner. And for real, what I'm coming to realize is that my partner is my mom. My mom has been there with me through everything. Check this out. I started smoking when I was 16 or 17 years old. You know. And when I started smoking for real, and I'm going to tell you something. The thing that haunted me the most is that I introduced my mom to coke. Come on, baby. Let's get that out the way. And for a long time, I felt guilty about that. Never talked about it. Went and smoked again. Never talked about it. Because I would tell myself she had a choice. You know, that's how I would let myself off the hook from that. But the reality of it is, I'm telling you, I know for a fact that I introduced my mom and then when we would smoke and fight, every time we would go through that, I would smoke more because I had to feel the fact that I had introduced her. You know, having to live with a person with all of that, look, my mom can't even talk, so it's really even hard for us to even do the amends process. Now, I know when she hugs me that she loves me, and I can rest assured that there's probably a whole lot of things she would like to say to me, but it don't even matter. It don't matter. So I was sitting over there, and I was listening to Rashida Shear, and I was thinking, you know, I have to ask myself sometimes, do I really want to be free too? You know, because I stay on that little mouse trap and go round and around and around and around and around and around. And look, when you haven't been sponsored for a while, When I haven't allowed somebody to really dig in and guide me in my recovery, you know, I suffer from a disease that it's hard to detect self-deception. And when I ran, because I run on my own thing for so long, you know, everything in me be saying, let that thing loose. And I'm one of the ones that I had one hand open and hold that thing behind my back. And I'm telling you, I start the process of letting people in. It's just something that happened. You know, but for real, my life depends on it. It's dangerous for the person with clean time not to let somebody guide them. And even in knowing all of that, I will convince myself that I can handle it. That I can handle it. On my knees, in the fetal position, you know, convincing myself that people don't love me, ain't nobody there for me. And it's all by choice. All by choice. You know, and I do glimpse, I do little drive-bys. I do little drive-bys. I call you for about 2-3 days. But I won't call the same person 2-3 days. I get one person this, and I get one person that. And, you know, I was talking to somebody, and I was saying, you know, it's so much more comfortable with me to share with the group. Because one-on-one is just a little too much for me. Because the people that I've had intimate relationships with have burnt me. And even though I know that the only way I'm going to get over is to go under, it just seems so hard. But anything worth having has always been hard for me. You know, and so I made a commitment. You know, one of my sponsee sisters been calling me and texting me and sharing her experience with me about not plugging in and not connecting. And, you know, I had told her, I said, today is the day. And guess what? 2 days later, I didn't feel the same. That's how insidious my disease was to separate me from the pack. You know, and it works for a minute, but because I smoked with 5 years, I don't stay in it too long. I got enough sense to know that. So I keep recommitting. Keep recommitting, even though I don't stay on the path, I get off and I jump right back on. And I keep recommitting, you know, because I'm willing. I am willing, you know, and despite everything that my disease tells me, I know that this is not a thing that I could do by myself. That my very life is on the line, not only mine, but look, the more I do what I need to do, the better I can do what I need to do at home. Yeah. You know, I can't do nothing at home if I ain't taking care of me. Yeah. You know, and I look at my mom. Look, when I came home from work, my mom, I have 2 bathrooms. My mom has her own bathroom. I have mine. And I came home to find my mom in the bathroom on the floor, unresponsive. And I remember getting down next to her and calling her name, and I was like, God, not like this. I know you ain't done with us. Not like this. Because all I can really think about is the last time I had cussed her out. The last time she had got on my nerves, and I had said, you know what, I really don't want to do this no more with my arrogant self. That's what came to mind. So she couldn't get up. So I had to get her up and dress her and put a sheet up under her and drag her to the front door because she was unresponsive. And what came to mind to me was, because you done shut everybody out, who are you going to call now? So I knocked on the neighbor's door. They helped me get her in a car. And I took her to the hospital. And I was thinking, I can't do this. I need to be sponsored. I need to be utilized in a support group. I need to come and tell people what's really going on with me. I need to stop acting like I got it all together. Yeah. I think they call it fake it till you make it. And it ain't no future in front. My life is on a lie. So look, when they said, you got the topic, what can I do? My sponsor said, oh my God, that's perfect for you. And I was like, for real? Because I can't see what's good for me. I can't even fathom what's good for me. I get glimpses of it, you know, of God's grace and mercy. You know, and then I put my hands in it because my way seemed, look, every time I think I got it under control, I'm out of control. Out of control. The only thing that I have down pat for real is that I stay surrounded around married people. Because I'm single, I really don't want to be off the hook. See, I'm scared of that part. Because I know once started, can't stop. You know, so I got that part down, you know. But the rest of that thing, all up for revision. But I'm grateful for the process. I'm grateful for the fact that even in the midst of whatever I'm going through, I have the ability to be honest. I have the ability to be honest. Because they told me when I got here, that was one of the three indispensables. And in regardless to everything else, I really, really, really don't want to smoke coke. No more. Because if I don't smoke coke, I got a chance. Got a chance. You know, so I keep coming back. I keep coming back. You know, my sponsee sister's staying with me, and I get to share one-on-one with some people, and this is what I'm telling you. This is my manipulation and a dope fiend in me. I say, if I share with my sponsee sisters, maybe they get back to my sponsor.
Nope.
Still trying to find, look, half measures avail us nothing. And I just need to say that for no other reason but that I need to tell on Carla. No, really. Really, because I've been around here for a long time and people know of me, but they don't know me. Everybody knows Carla, so they think. I could be in a room full of people and 20 of them will hug me and call me by name, but they really don't know. And that's a hell of a way to live in a program that they say that we need each other. That this is a place you really can't function or operate by yourself. So I don't know. I know God is the head of me because without him, I don't know where I would be. I know that he's been like shifting me and moving me to get me a position. Look. All I know is that when I came in here, that chapter meant one thing. And after being here for a while, it has taken on a whole new, look. It has taken on a whole new, like, I be saying, well, why do I have to keep making meetings? It ain't about smoking coke. You are your own worst enemy, broad. My thinking still tell me that I could do things that I really shouldn't be doing and get away with it clean. But I don't get away with it clean because it's a high cost for low living. Yeah, it is. It's a high cost for low living. And I'm not talking about doing a whole bunch of crazy shit. I'm talking about not being able to lay my head at night because I know I haven't done the right thing for the right reason. Not tricking, not lying, not stealing, just not doing the right thing for the right reason. That's right, baby. And I don't know about nobody else. At night, when I have not done all that I know I can do, I feel some kind of way. Yeah. I feel like I have prostituted my morals and my values when I don't be the best that I can be every day. And that's a hell of a way to live clean. Now I could do it in the street. No, I couldn't even do it in the street. That's why I ended up here. He stopped trying to fool myself. You know. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the process. I'm grateful for the fact that I learned to keep coming back no matter what. If you don't get high, if you don't pick it up, you don't get high. You know. And with behind everything, behind that, everything else will fall in place. You know, I've had several sponsors since I've been clean. And I would like to use the fact that, you know, one of them told my stuff. And for real, that don't even matter. You know, I keep finding ways and means not to do what I need to do. And the chapter is, what can I do? What not? What can I not do? So I'm grateful. I done cried enough. They told me I can't have no tissue. I got snot and all that. So I'm grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Can we thank Rashida and Carla? Is there anyone would like to share? We have a nice way of closing. You can remain in your seats. Can we close with the serenity prayer, please? God.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know
your will. God's prayer.
Great job.
Thank you.
Rashida, you heard.